Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily.
Welcome in, everybody. Happy Thursday to you here on Sports Daily. Glad to be with you on the air, and glad to have Max, our fearless producer, back in the chair. Who knows where Max has been the last week and a half? You don't ask those kinds of questions when it comes to our Max Power. It's information that you don't need to know, and you wouldn't get it anyway. So we're glad to have Max back. He's on the line, taking your calls, 869-1240. Also taking your comments on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. Also, thanks to those watching us on 12 News Connected. And of course, you can leave us voice messages at us always if you're listening to us on the Odyssey app. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here. Busy show. Thursdays are always busy. We've got Tim Fitzgerald checking in from Manhattan. What on earth has happened to the Wildcats now into the bye week? We will get the latest from Fitz. We'll also talk to our betting insider, PJ Glasser, looking ahead to Thursday night football, looking ahead to a college football weekend, and looking ahead, of course, to week three in the NFL. What are some ways that we might be able to make a little money heading into the holiday season? Never too early to start saving up, right? Good morning, Tommy. How are you?
I'm good. I'm better than I have been in days. I'm glad Max is back. I've been trying to kind of piecemeal together producing this show in Max's absence, but nobody can do it better than him. So I'm glad that he's back. He did say something to me about he went to go look at a car, but he was gone for like 10 days. I'm not sure that takes 10 days to go look at a car. So I don't know if I buy that. I don't know what he's been up to, what he's been doing, but he is the international man of mystery. So who knows?
You had to go see a guy about a thing.
Yeah.
And we're glad to have him back.
We need to know. We don't need to know anything else.
That's right. We don't need to, and we probably don't want to.
Yeah.
It's all what's on tap, by the way, in this hour, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, celebrating National Pepperoni Pizza Day on Saturday, which is September 20th. So for $9.20, you can get a pepperoni pizza, a pepperoni pizza, or WBC's famous pepperoni rolls. Enjoy National Pepperoni Pizza Day at WBC on 9/20 Saturday with $9.20 specials. Wichita Brewing Company pepperoni pizzas and beer made here. All right. We got a lot to talk about. The Royals get a win last night, 7-5 over the Mariners. They hang on. Little spooky there in the 8th and 9th inning, but they do hang on and get it done against Seattle. A big hit late by Adam Frazier is the critical moment, and they hang on. So here we go. We said they needed all 11. Well, technically, we said they needed all 12, which they definitely needed all 11. 10 more to go, and we'll see what the Royals can do with it. They now get back to 500, Tommy. But I want to see him go down swinging if they're going to go down. So that was nice last night.
Yeah, I mean, look, they were able to hang on and get it done. The Carlos Estevez got the save. Lucas Ursig got the win. The bats came alive earlier in the game than they did in the opener in that series, when it took more than half of the game for the Royals bats to start to respond, and they had already dug themselves a pretty big hole in that opener. So it was good to see, at least offensively, things come around. But like you mentioned, it got a little bit shaky there at one point. But at the end of the day, the Royals are able to take down a team ahead of them in the wild card. It's extremely unlikely they can do anything to get into the playoffs at this point. But, you know, at least they were able to get one against a team in front of them.
Yeah, it's always... Always good this time of year when it feels like things might be out of control that they can get a win. We get a ton of positive Chiefs injury news as well. And we'll talk about this more in just a minute, but both Xavier Worthy, Tommy, and Jalen Royals back at practice. Now, both were listed in the practice report as limited participants, but from what Andy Reid said, at least Xavier Worthy wasn't really limited in any way. I would expect Xavier Worthy to play this weekend. Royals being back out there was interesting and a bit unexpected, but he's back out there and he's working. So maybe sooner than later, you know, Patrick Mahomes turned 30 years old yesterday, Tommy. What a birthday present that would be to get two of his at least top four receiving options back in the game in time to play the Giants there this weekend.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, I think that from what we've heard and what we know, Xavier Worthy has been trending to play for this in this game. I mean, basically dating all the way back to last week, like getting practice ready to go for the game that they played against the Eagles. But I mean, having him back on the field, it sounds like he's, you know, got mobility at least to an extent to where he feels like he can go. The pain tolerance should be okay. I mean, we don't know for sure yet if he's a go, but it certainly sounds like that's the way it's trending. And we talked yesterday about, with Jalen Royals not having any information whatsoever and it kind of being an afterthought, him being back out on the field even as a limited participant, that could bode pretty well if the Chiefs can at least have him. Because we don't even know. We don't even know what he can do. We don't even know what his skill set is necessarily. But at least having him be potentially available and even in a limited capacity is better than nothing.
Yeah, and you know, I don't want to discount either how much buzz he had before the injury in camp in the preseason. Like, all we were hearing is he's ahead of schedule, ahead of where rookies typically are in this offense. And we'll dig into it as we go into the next segment, because I do think it's pretty significant as far as this game this weekend and this immediate future. I also want to know what PJ Glasser thinks about it in terms of bets. Like, what does this do to the line? Like, what does Vegas think this is worth? Because right now, the line hasn't really moved. In fact, it's moved more toward the Giants. It started, at least when we started talking about it this week, it was at 6.5. It's now at 6. So what, you know, what impact would this really have? We'll get into it with Glasser, both from a betting perspective, but just the curiosity of what do the odds makers think those guys are valued at? Right now, nothing as far as the line movement. But we also don't have official word that they're going to play either. Perhaps that's an opportunity to get out ahead of the markets. But we'll get into that as well. And then the conversation with Fitz, Tommy. Listen, one thing we know about our buddy Fitz, he's not going to pull punches. So, you know, I am very curious to hear inside of what's happening in Manhattan right now, because it is, to the rest of us, wildly troubling.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I've had this particular interview circled on my calendar for a long time. I know you've been out the last couple of Thursdays, so you haven't had a chance to talk to him recently. But each week we've had him on, it's gotten progressively more and more frustrating, I think, and the tone of
dystopian.
And I think that some of it too. I mean, one thing I noticed with our segment with Fitz last week was that he was almost at a loss for words. And, you know, some of the answers to the questions we asked were short and sweet, because I'm not sure that at that point he had fully wrapped his mind around everything or even fully really knew what to make of all of it. And then they lose again. And so I can only imagine the way that it's going to be, you know, today and some of the thoughts and takeaways from Fitz.
Yep, it's an interesting time there. Hey, Open Streets ICT Douglas happening Sunday, September 28th from 12 to 4. It's a free community event. 3 miles of Douglas Avenue, Grove Street to Glen Street. By closing it down, they let you get out there. No motorized traffic, so walking, biking, skating, socializing. There'll be 5 activity hubs, food trucks, family activities, street vendors. A lot of fun. Visit OpenStreetsICT.com for more details. We'll talk about this wide receiver practice news for the Chiefs when we return on Sports Daily.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Glad to be with you on this Thursday edition. All right, Tommy, we get injury news for the Chiefs. Xavier Worthy, Jalen Royals, both back at practice. I don't know if you watched that practice video, but to me, they both look fine.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they've got, you know, definitely the ability to go in some capacity. I mean, obviously practice speed and game speed, two totally different things. And I don't know if they've got the ability to both of them go the entire game and not be limited in any kind of capacity, but certainly this is a good look from what we saw from the video from practice.
I saw Worthy catching some passes, and he doesn't look restricted there. I don't know, like, from his injury, I don't know what other part of it would concern us other than can he move his arms fully in the way he needs to move his arms to catch the ball? And he looks like he can. If he can do that in practice, which we saw video of it yesterday, I mean, he can do it in a game. Maybe it maybe it's a little bit restrictive in a game, but it's going to be better than what they have, because the reality for those players is it's what they do. Well, we don't know about Royals yet, but for Worthy especially, it's what he does after he catches the ball anyway. You just got to get it to him. And the way that they utilized him and deployed him last year toward the end of the year when he really got effective, he wasn't like a deep ball guy. They just got it to him near the line and let him run a little bit after the catch. So I do think that's a big addition for the Chiefs right now. I think both of these players would make them a much better team. Where did we have them in the ranking of Chiefs wide receivers? You at least had them as two of the top four options, right?
Yeah.
With Rashee Rice and Hollywood Brown. I don't, you know, as much as I think everybody appreciates Juju Smith-Schuster as a pass catching option, he's not particularly that high anymore. So whether, you know, depending on what you thought about Royals, the Chiefs are either getting two of their top four pass catching options back, or maybe even two of their top three of what you'd envision. That's a big deal for the offense. I mean, a big part of why they've struggled. I don't care what anybody says. Like when you're missing good players, it's going to affect your team, some more than others. But when it's three of them with Rashee Rice, now you're down. Like, it's the same old story we've told for 3 years. And it's, I don't want to call it unlucky, because Rashee Rice's situation is not unlucky. It's unlucky, I guess, if you're the Chiefs organization, but he made a decision. But every year for the last three, the same challenge has presented itself for different ways, and they have attacked the problem, and they continue to kind of be unfortunate there. And now maybe they're not going to be for as long this season. I do think it. I think it's a big deal. I think it's a really big deal.
I think there's one other thing with Xavier Worthy that I think about, and it's different than, is he restricted in catching the football? Is he limited in his mobility and range and all of that? One other thing is, can he take a hit? And what happens if he gets, you know, hit hard and lit up a little bit? Like, is there the risk of further injury? Is there the risk of aggravating something where the pain tolerance is at a point to where he then has to go and sit? Because, you know, especially if he's an underneath type guy, intermediate type guy, and a run after catch type guy, he's going to get hit, right? Like, it's a little bit different than, you know, Tyquan Thornton's role, or Hollywood Brown's role, or even like if you look at a, you know, another team, the team that they're facing this weekend, he's different than Malik Nabers, where like the deep ball threat is there and he can get out in space and be open to catch a long pass and avoid getting tackled. If it, you know, Xavier Worthy is going to play the way that they want him to play, he's going to get hit. And so can he take that hit? Can he absorb that without the risk of further injury, re-injury, aggravating what he's already got going on, all of that? I do wonder about that too.
Yeah, but that's always going to be there, right? Unless he has surgery. I don't think that changes in week three or week 12.
And right? It might, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a doctor.
I mean,
trainer.
I don't know
it
either, might just but
be,
I assume.
It might just be a torn labrum is a torn labrum is a torn labrum, and you get hit, it's probably going to hurt a little bit, but you're good right. to go. Or it could be, man, he injured it worse, and or the pain is to a point to where he's got to leave a game again. I don't know. I don't know that.
You know, to the point you brought up yesterday, though, I feel like if it was worse, we wouldn't see guys like Kittle and Beckham and others play through this injury maybe as often as they have. It does seem like it's a pain thing, and then you got to correct it at some point. Like, you'll deal with it, but you'll deal with it down the road. And there are football injuries like that all the time. Most of these guys, by the end of the season, they're like, they're all playing hurt. Like, they're all playing with injuries. Nobody's healthy. It's football. So hopefully for him, it's not restrictive. And yeah, he doesn't hurt it more. That would be quite the danger.
I don't know if you can. I mean, that's the thing that's kind of up in the air for me is, can you hurt it more, hurt it worse? You know, like that sort of thing. I don't know. I think that's going to be interesting to see.
And good for Worthy. Look, if he can and he's taking that risk, I think he understands the urgency of I don't know what anybody else thinks beyond this year, but there is some urgency to this season, right? You have Kelce there. How much longer is Andy Reid going to do this? You know, the defense, you're likely going to have to turn over some really good players at some point in the next handful of years. There could be a period of time where we don't walk into every season and just see the Chiefs as the inherent favorite because they always make it there. Like, I don't know that that's going to continue for every season of Patrick Mahomes' career. It didn't for Tom Brady. Like, they needed a minute to reload that thing. And that may be coming too. So there is some urgency this year, I think. And maybe Worthy senses that either way, he's getting out there. He's going to put himself out there. Royals, we still don't even know what was ever wrong technically with Royals. It was tendonitis is what we're told. So hopefully he's out there too. I got to tell you, seeing him at practice, like, that dude's huge. He is a big dude. And anything that they can get right now, as far as playmaking or whatever, is going to help this offense. They don't have any juice as much as anything else when we watch them, Tommy. Like, there's just no juice to the offense right now. Like, other than, like, there's only one element of it, and it's trying to throw a deep ball to Tyquan Thornton. Do you ever feel like any plays breaking off for a long one other than that possibility? It just doesn't
not for a long one. You know, I don't have it in front of me, but I know, like, their yards per play in the game against the Eagles was pretty low. And it, especially if you take away the one deep ball connection TD to Thornton, it really goes down quite a bit, their average yards per play. So, no, I certainly don't think that that's there. And I know that they, you know, Patrick Mahomes has really tried to, you know, pepper Hollywood Brown and Travis Kelce and all of that. I get all of that because those are your top options right now out on the field. But that's certainly not ideal. I mean, really, the only play other than a deep ball to Tyquan Thornton that connected one out of three times in week number two, the only other threat to even move the chains was Mahomes running the ball himself.
Right.
That was pretty much it. That's the only kind of consistent offense they had.
Which, of course, comes with its own risks. And, you know, Mahomes talked about it a little bit. Andy Reid talked about it a little bit yesterday. Reid doesn't have a problem with it as long as he's upright at the end of the play. Mahomes, you know, kind of hinted that he feels pretty good about when he chooses to try to run through it. That's all fine and good. Like, we'd all be happier. Like, nobody's going to say anything if you just go ahead and run out of bounds or if you just go ahead and slide. Just, you know, it's amazing to see him do it. I think it's a really cool part of his game. I think it is a really dangerous, I mean, if you're the opposition, it's a really dangerous part of his game. Like, if imagine if he was doing that 3 years ago, Tommy, like if he added that wrinkle to his game when they were a little bit more high octane on offense. So it's something to keep there. But then at the end of the day, all of these things are there and they better win some games. It's going to be tough this year if they can't. This Giants game, man, it's the Giants. And I wouldn't say I was annoyed, but I was like, we're really going to put the Giants in primetime. Like, I know everybody wants the Chiefs there, but we're really going to have to watch the Giants in primetime. Now it feels like there's some gravity to this game. Like, it's, if you're NBC, you can get a pretty good storyline painted up right away. Like, this, there is desperation here for the Chiefs. I really think there is. It's not, look, if they go 0-3, is that the end of their season? Of course it's not. But that is hard to come back from in this league. And it's hard to come back from when you know you still have three more weeks before you get your top receiver back. That's why this feels like a bigger deal to me that these two are coming back now. I didn't think that either one of them were going to play this weekend, to be perfectly honest with you. I thought there was an outside chance on Worthy. Now I feel like Worthy's for sure going to play, and maybe there's an outside chance on Royals.
I think that the other thing to keep in mind, too, let's assume that the Chiefs get both Worthy and Royals back this weekend, and then they're only down Rashee Rice from being at full strength entirely. One thing to keep in mind, it goes back to what I've been talking about throughout the entire offseason, is that for me, it's personnel, but then it's also scheme. And they haven't been able to run any kind of semblance, I think, of what they want to run from a playbook perspective because they've been down the personnel, and I totally understand that. But as they get closer and closer to full strength, I want to see if they have different kinds of rabbits to pull out of their hat. You know, and I've seen a lot of discussion online and different blogs and articles and whatever talking about how through the first couple of weeks in the season, obviously, yes, they've been down personnel, but their offense, the play calling and the playbook in general looks pretty stale and it looks pretty pedestrian. And, you know, it's very predictable, just kind of, you know, Patrick Mahomes taking the snap in the shotgun, dropping back a couple of yards, and then waiting for something to develop. And I didn't even really think about this until I started reading up on it. And I don't know if you've noticed this. Try to think of a time when the Chiefs go play action. They don't really go play action.
Yeah, they start too often in shotgun.
They start in shotgun a lot. Like, we never see Mahomes under center. We rarely see them in the pistol. We rarely see them do play fakes. And so it becomes pretty predictable defensively on what they're going to do. And so I think that's something to keep an eye on. Maybe not right away this weekend, because again, they're still working Worthy back and they're still working Jalen Royals back, and they're not at full strength, and it may not even get to that point until Rashee Rice returns. But as they start to get healthier and healthier and return different pieces, that's going to be the next thing I look at. Like, I don't want to have this full complement of skill players out on the field and them still just doing the predictable offense, right? Like, I want to see it change schematically as well.
Well, and I think that they historically have been able to use motion and do some things uniquely that create the same sort of, you know, pre-snap action as play action. But yeah, look, if you could run the ball effectively, maybe you could do something like introduce play action. I don't know if, and it's a little strange to be perfectly honest, I don't know if they're going to run the ball effectively, because they're healthy back there. They lose Joe Tooney, which is a big deal when it comes to the run, but they should still be able to run the ball, and they haven't done that yet this year. I mean, they've tried, but it just hasn't been an effective, and I don't know if the pass game is going to open that up at all and help them. It is a little strange, though, this year through two games, that we haven't seen that be more effective. They're trying. Like, I'm perfectly comfortable with what we saw in the second game of the season as far as a workload to run the ball. Like, I'm good with it. Like, if that's what they do the rest of the year, I'll be fine with it. How do they make that more effective? Because that's going to help the pass game too. And maybe it is as simple as they need the pass game to help the run game, but it'd be sure nice if they could get the run game to help the pass game.
Yeah, I mean,
if you were another team, they're running play action, would you even respect it?
Yeah, no, I think there was a period of time in the game against the Eagles where they had to really, you know, lean on the run game. And so at that point, yeah, maybe you try to soften things up a little bit by play faking it. Like, I think of that stretch when they handed the ball three times in a row to Pacheco. Okay, well, then at that point, maybe implement a play action on the fourth time, right? We're already at a point now where, you know, social media and Chiefs Kingdom online, they're clamoring for running back trades. Like, who's out there right now that the Chiefs can go and trade for? It's not going to happen.
I don't think that's going to matter.
But there have been a lot of names, you know, like I've seen guys like Alvin Kamara floated around, you know, because the Saints aren't going anywhere. And I've seen, you know, names like Devon Achane floated around because the Dolphins are a disaster, like all these different things. And sure, like, I think that would be absolutely an improvement on what they are currently doing in the backfield. But I think the issue running the football is more layered and detailed than just the fact that they need another body. I'm not sure that's totally the fix. Like, I think it's a culmination, a combination of a lot of different things as to why they're not running the ball effectively.
I don't think Isaiah Pacheco, I think he looks healthy. He doesn't look like a different player. I don't know. Again, somebody asked the question, it was Rick earlier in the week, asked the question about Matt Nagy. I don't know if that's in his wheelhouse. Like, I don't, whoever the, like, the run game coordinator, it just, like, the whole package of running the ball looks a little disjointed.
That is one area that I will give a significant amount of credit to Eric Bieniemy for. Like, I give Bieniemy credit in general. And right. I think that, I mean, obviously we've seen the offense get more and more stagnant the longer that Bieniemy is away from the team. But I mean, Bieniemy's a former running back in both college and the NFL. Like, he is skilled in that way. And I think that, you know, like, that I yearn for the days of, you know, having a guy like Jamal Charles on the team, or, you know, he even made guys that weren't, you know, incredible running backs look really good. Remember Damian Williams? Like, Damian Williams was only good with the Chiefs when Eric Bieniemy was his
Chiefs never didn't have a good run game,
right?
In those years, like, absolutely, they were always good.
Yeah, and it was always next man up. Like, it was guy like Sharkhandrick West, you know, was a guy that looked pretty good when he was the Chiefs running back, mainly because of the scheme that was around him.
Long story short, I don't buy into the they need to go get a running back. They need to fix the run game. But I don't think it's a Pacheco issue. No. Pacheco looks like the same player he's always looked like. He's going to run really hard right at it. Could he be more patient? Yeah, I suppose he
probably
could
have a little bit better vision to try to anticipate.
But I don't know that they. I don't know that those opportunities have presented themselves for the Chiefs. So it needs to be a tool in the tool belt. But the answer to me for this offense in the moment is to get healthier at wide receiver, have some playmakers there that can go do some special things after the catch, especially if Kelce is getting older, right? We saw it last year. It's like, okay, I'm not sure I totally buy it. It's a position that typically does not age well in the NFL. And yeah, he's just not the same player he was 3 years ago. Of course he's not. So he needs some help. The offense needs some help, and getting these wide receivers back should help. Hopefully it will. When we come back, Tom, I mentioned this. Patrick Mahomes turned 30 yesterday, Tommy. So, of course, everybody has some fun with that. I love putting Mahomes up next to Brady. I love because he's the next best chance, right? I think we would all agree on that. Whether you think Mahomes is the best quarterback in the league right now, he's the guy that has any shot to go after some of what Brady was able to put together. So he's 30. Not quite halfway to his career, but maybe a good halfway point. I want to take a look at what he's got and what Brady did and what are the chances he could catch him in some of these categories where Brady is just out of control. All right, Tommy. Patrick Mahomes turns 30 years old. He has been a starter in the league essentially for eight. This is his eighth season, right, as a starter. He, in those seasons, has been to the Pro Bowl six times, has won the Super Bowl three times, and has been the Super Bowl MVP three times. We know Tom Brady played, Tom Brady played more than 16 seasons, right? He had a 23-year career. So it's not exactly a time to take like halves on this, but I do think the age of 30 is a good time to take a look at it. Past the age of 30, Tom Brady was an MVP in 2007, in 2010, and 2017. They won, oh gosh, how many Super Bowls did they win after the age of 30 there, Tommy? They won another four, I believe. He was a Pro Bowler a billion times after the age of 30. But all told, he was a 15 over the course of his career, a 15-time Pro Bowler, a three-time MVP, and a seven-time Super Bowl champion. The statistical numbers, we're not to the point where we can start thinking about Mahomes that way. He just hasn't played long enough. But what do you think, if Mahomes is the next best chance to do some of the things we saw Brady do, he may be the only chance. Where do you think he lands on any of this? I think he'll get another MVP. So I think he'll catch him there. Brady had three. Mahomes has two now. I think Mahomes will get at least one more of those. I would have said the stats are a foregone conclusion, but over the last 3 years, I don't know that I think that anymore. Like Mahomes early in his career, it looked like he was going to come in and just be a statistical dynamo every single year. Well, he hasn't been for the last three. So we know that's not going to be the case. The championships, what, we really think they're going to win. Is he going to win four more Super Bowls? He hadn't even won four yet. So the craziness of Brady is how much he did after the age of 30, in my opinion.
No, that's where it is. I mean, because a lot of it, a huge part of it's going to come down to how long can Patrick Mahomes play? I mean, he just turned 30. You'd like to think that he can play another 10 years minimum, but will he be able to go into his early 40s like Tom Brady did? And that's going to be the number one question. If he plays only another 10 years, yeah, I'm not sure four Super Bowls is realistic for him over the next 10 years. If he can play another 12, 13, 15 years, then yeah, maybe so. Like that becomes a little bit easier, I think, of a stat to accomplish for Mahomes. It's so hard to win a Super Bowl. And obviously, you know, the Chiefs have been to many of them. And they've got three championships to show for it before Mahomes turned 30. So he's already pacing better than Brady did, but Brady had a lot more longevity to be able to get a lot more done after the age of 30. So it's gonna come down to how much Mahomes has in the tank later on in his career.
Yeah, and that's where I think when we look at it, we have to think about, if he's going to catch him, you have to envision all of this stuff after 30. Everybody likes to put, like, with these young quarterbacks, it's like, where was Brady through the same or through the same time, right? Like, where did he sit at 30? And a lot of the time we see it, not necessarily with the Super Bowls. Mahomes is the only guy who's been able to do that, but with some of the numbers, and you're like, oh, you know, maybe that's it. And then you look at it, like, you really look at it, at what Brady did, and understand it was his age 30 season when he threw for 4,800 yards and 50 touchdowns. And then he threw for 4,000 yards, another 11 times after that season. So from 2008, when his age 31 season, when he got hurt, on 11 other times. From age 32 to 45, he threw for 4,000 yards. That's insane.
Yeah, I mean, look, like from a statistical point of view, you know, all of the different career totals that Brady has, you know, things like yards and touchdowns and, you know, all the things that he did. I mean, obviously he had the benefit of playing forever, you know, and so with the years and years and years of just piling up stats and yards and TDs and all the different things he did in his career. I mean, yeah, that's going to be extremely difficult to ever do more than. So, I mean, like that's on the table for sure. The one thing that Mahomes has right now through the first, you know, decade of his career, ultimately, is from an efficiency point of view, Mahomes is better than Brady was at the age of 30, right? Like things like, you know, yards per game and passer ratings. Like if you're breaking it down from an efficiency standpoint, he's got better stats in that regard through the first decade of his career. But again, it goes back to what we've talked about before. What does it look like after the age of 30? Brady got statistically better in his 30s than he was in his 20s. In some ways, in some statistical categories, he was better in his 40s than he was in his 30s. So, like, he got better with age, and that's nearly impossible to have happen, and Brady was able to do it.
Man, they're so similar, right? Neither of them throw a ton of interceptions. They both complete a bunch of passes. Obviously, the wins are the most important thing and the main reason why people put them together. But then there are these other things. Brady wasn't the kind of athlete Mahomes is, but they both had kind of the, you know, the Gumby effect, right? The ability to absorb contact. The one thing I'll say that Brady did masterfully late in his career, and this is probably one of the things that we don't really talk about that will determine whether or not Mahomes can do any of this, is Brady just didn't take a lot of hits at post 30. Like the old man Brady never got hit. He partly because he made the decisions to not put himself in those situations where he'd get rid of the ball, or he always had a good offensive line. When did Brady ever not play with a good offensive line? Right? It just didn't happen. And all the organizations he played for did a good job of making sure that didn't happen. The Chiefs are clear. This is why we always say, like, I could not choke to death on my own spit here in this segment. It'd be great, Tommy. Sorry. Apologies to everybody out there. The one thing that we know the Chiefs are trying to do is be really good on the offensive line. They've invested so much money and energy in that spot. It's why I have always supported them in those endeavors. Now, it's taken them a long time at left tackle, but they're trying. They're clearly, you know, prioritizing making sure he's upright more than anything else that they do. And it's something we see teams like the Bengals fumble, right? How do you let Burrow sit behind bad offensive lines every year? I mean, it's what a disaster that is. Again, every other year, he has to leave with a major injury because he gets clobbered back there. So I think the Chiefs are the right organization for it because I think they fundamentally are trying to do it the same way. I think Mahomes and Brady have always been very similar players. So I think that works to his advantage. And now it'll be, you know, can they find the right group to continue to be successful? But man, it's a big ask. As great as Mahomes has been through 30, like that's what's going to make Brady it's what's going to make LeBron James untouchable at some point. It's what's making Brady feel untouchable. It's how good they were in the late 30s into 40s, which is, you know, is that something we see from Mahomes? We're a decade away from knowing that.
Yeah, again, it goes back to how much will he have in the tank at the age of 40? Like, will there be, will the career be winding down, or will he have what it takes to be able to continue moving forward? And it's not uncommon now to see, you know, some quarterbacks at least playing into their 40s. Brady is the gold standard of that, but Aaron Rodgers is doing that now. You know, that there are other guys that can do that and have done that. But how effective? Like, Aaron Rodgers is not winning MVPs anymore. But he did, like, almost
late 30s.
Like, almost before he hit 40. And then, you know, he hasn't played to that level, you know, since then, obviously. So that the jury is still out, and it's going to be out for a long time on the longevity of Mahomes and, you know, where he can be. And I know the ultimate factor, the ultimate stat that everybody's going to point out when it's all said and done and Mahomes's his career is gone is how many Super Bowls did he get? Brady got
seven.
Well,
how many?
Like, nobody else has done that.
How many do you think he has to get for us to put that part of it aside?
Seven. Like, I don't think that.
You think he has to actually get
to that? I mean, I don't think you can have an argument of Mahomes versus Brady and be able to say, like, Mahomes is the GOAT, you know, and Brady is not, unless he matches him in Super Bowls. Otherwise,
well, I think if he matches him statistically, has a few more MVPs,
but only has
Brady,
four Super Bowls potentially,
like
five,
like, or five.
I mean, I don't know. I
think at that point we can at least have that conversation, right? We'll never, you know. Well, let's just ask it. Do you think Mahomes is going to win seven Super Bowls? I don't think so.
Probably not.
Yeah. So, I mean, as I look at that now. We said that about Brady. I mean, we would have never said that. Mahomes could have five already, right? Like, that's how crazy that is. That they lost two Super Bowls too. The fact that he's always in one, if that projects out, then yeah, he's going to get seven. But that's a big ask of the organization to just be spot on all the time and never take that dip. Right. Like, they have the best floor in football through Mahomes. But I love looking at Brady as we watch Mahomes's career. I'm so glad they got to play together for a few years. I thought that was really, really cool. And for one of the great generations of quarterback in this league, because I think we're in one right now. Like, I really do. I think you could drop Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, or Joe Burrow into any generation, and they would probably be the best quarterbacks of wherever they're playing. And there may be more than that too, but those four for sure. Like, we are in a golden era of quarterback play right now in the NFL, and none of them are probably going to catch Brady in what he's done. Mahomes is the best chance because he already has the three Super Bowls. These other guys don't even have one because Mahomes is in their way. So we'll see. It's a fun one. I don't know if everybody else likes that. I love the idea of Mahomes chasing Brady, and I hope that he gets that chance 8 years from now, 9 years from now, where we're having these conversations. I do think, based on what we've seen and his ability to, you know, take contact and be Gumby, that Gumby effect, he's got a chance to play that long if he wants to. I think he has a chance to play up there where Rodgers and Brady and the things that they've been able to do. I'm not sure I think that about some of the other guys that maybe are a little more mobile, but now we're starting to see Mahomes be a mobile quarterback. He's starting to run around.
And by the way, I mean, who knows what the game is going to look like 10 years from now? Who knows what technology will be 10 years from now? I mean, from the time that Brady retired, dating all the way back to when he started in the NFL, you know, the nutrition that he had and the workout routine, like all the different things, that he had, that wasn't around when he first got into the league. So who knows what things will look like when Mahomes is 40 compared to where he is right now.
They may be playing 20 games a year by the time he's 42, which will throw the numbers into out of whack. All right, we'll come back. We got another hour. It's a busy hour. Two guests coming up in the next hour. You don't want to miss either of them. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back in, everybody. Glad to have you here with us on this Thursday. Glad to have Max Power back with us from a long vacation, long time away. Just a couple more days here with Tommy in that primary chair over there. TJ, Brandon going to step in as Tommy steps up his role across the Odyssey family. So if you've got any fun to make at Tommy's expense, now's the time. Now's the time. We can always relay the message for you, not to worry, but if you'd like to make it to Tommy directly, now is the time.
You know, it can be also compliments and, you know, really positive things to say about me as well.
We don't do that here on this show.
It doesn't just have to be negative complaints about my performance.
I don't know where you've been the last 3 years. We don't do a lot of that here. This is that old, like, suppress your feelings, never, you know, give each other a hard time. This is the old school family dynamic.
Okay, good.
Here on Sports Daily.
Yeah, good to know that.
But we have a good hour of program coming up for you. PJ Glasser joins us next segment. Tim Fitzgerald will join us later in this hour to talk K-State. We're going to talk betting. Looking forward to all of it. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, which is celebrating National Pepperoni Pizza Day Saturday, which is September 20th. So 9/20, right? Well, for $9.20 on Saturday, you can get a pepperoni pizza, pepperoni pizza, or WBC's famous pepperoni rolls. Enjoy National Pepperoni Pizza Day at WBC on 9/20. With $9.20 specials, Wichita Brewing Company pepperoni pizzas and beer made here. Tomorrow, Tommy, we bring in the whole gang for some picks. We will make high school football pick. We will make college and pro picks, and we will talk high school football tomorrow and get you ready for the weekend. High school football coverage, by the way, on Sports Daily, brought to you by Zentex Remodeling Group. Remodel your bathroom in as little as one day with Zintex Remodeling Group, Zintex.com. The Royals, Tommy, as we get ready to talk a whole lot of football the rest of the hour, the Royals get a 7-5 win last night, day baseball today. Let's talk about that just a little bit. Cole Reagan's made his return. It was a pretty big day organizationally to get him back out there. Not amazing, still not the Cole Reagan's of last year. But okay, 3 2/3 innings, gave up a couple of runs, struck out four, threw 62 pitches. Honestly, about what I expected from Reagan's. Reagan's, I don't think, is like back as much to help them try to get to the playoffs. I mean, that he is, but the reality is, like, let's just get a couple starts under his belt to kind of get the ball rolling again toward next year.
Yeah, I think the perception is the really important thing with Reagan's coming back. They could have easily shut him down and been like, look, we've got 11 games left in the season. Why don't we just go ahead and shut it down and we'll get you ready for spring training for next season. That being said, though, I do think that there probably would have been quite a bit of conversation and narrative around Reagan's during the offseason about where is he at? What does it look like? We saw him hit the IL earlier in the season, then never saw him again. And so that's a big unknown. Getting him back out there, even if he's not vintage Cole Reagan's, even if he's not what he did at the very beginning of this year, and then, you know, of course, dating back to last season, at least we get a look at him. At least we get a couple of starts for him under his belt before the offseason hits. And I do think the perception of that's pretty important.
It's very important. Like, as we talked about yesterday, like, I do think there's all this positive momentum organizationally, and I think it's all well-timed, and I think we're going to enter a really fun era of Royals baseball over the next few years. Reagan's is a big part of that. You bake him being what he was last year, which is like a Cy Young candidate, right, into the expectations for this organization. If that doesn't happen, it's going to make it a lot more challenging, right? Because they made their commitment to Seth Lugo, which we like. He stumbled a bit, but you have that confidence. But it really is the confidence in those two guys and Bobby Witt Jr. where everything starts organizationally, I think. It's that we think they're going to have a good starting rotation. You know, we think we're going to have a lineup anchored by one of the best players in baseball. That's where you start. So Reagan's is a big part.
Yeah, I disagree. I disagree a little bit on that. I think that, obviously they need to have Reagan's be good, but I don't think that they need to have an expectation that he'll be a perennial Cy Young candidate like he was a year ago. I don't think that that's accurate. I think that as long as he is a solid pitcher, and you know what? Honestly, before he went down with his injury, he wasn't amazing, but he wasn't bad. Like, I don't think he was overall bad. Like, he had some bad starts for sure, but he also had, you know, some starts that looked good, and who knows, you know, where he was health-wise. I thought he was fine, but here's the good thing about the Royals rotation is they have a tremendous amount of depth, and if they can have Noah Cameron duplicate what he did this year, if they can have Chris Bubich duplicate what he did this year, they've got depth to be able to compensate for Cole Reagan's not pitching at a Cy Young caliber moving forward. I don't think he has to do that for the Royals to have success.
I hope you're wrong about that, Tommy. He didn't make it out of the fifth inning giving up more than four runs in six out of his last seven starts before he got hurt. He was bad.
I don't think he was healthy. I mean, I don't think that he...
Well, that's what I agree. Like, I hope he wasn't healthy, right? I hope it was just that he wasn't healthy. And that's why... And I don't know that we're going to get a total answer to that down the stretch with him here. And I don't think that that's even a fair thing to want, right? I just want to see him physically be able to make starts. And then next year we can reevaluate. But there were some metrics in there, and Eisenberg was talking about it right here on KFH last night. His batting average on balls in play, which is one of the it's BABIP, BABIP. If you've seen it, it's an analytics thing. It was by far the worst in baseball when he was going bad. Like, the batting average on balls that were put in play, and that's a really complicated stat because I think they pull out home runs, which is another problem he's had, but it was almost 300. Like, it was, no, I'm sorry, I think it was almost 400. It was not good. Like, there were some things.
The takeaway on that is that balls that were being hit were resulting in hits and doubles and triple, like all of that.
Yes.
So you strip away like strikeouts from that, obviously.
Right. It's a weird stat, but it is one of those like underlying ones, like a pitching metric where you can generally see who is, you know, by some of the more traditional metrics like ERA and WHIP and the things that we look at, like who is maybe deceiving us in their stats. His outlier numbers were really, really bad. So what does all that mean? To me, it means hopefully he just was not healthy. Now, you never want to say a guy's not healthy, but hopefully that's why that was happening. And then his health is back to a clean bill to start the next year. So if what we're focusing on now is only that, and that to me, it kind of is, like, I just want to see him physically be able to get through some starts to end this season. We're not going to know the answers to the other stuff until next year. It doesn't make any sense, Tommy, that he's as dominant as he has been, and then all of a sudden the wheels fall off like that, unless there is a physical component to it. So that to me, that's all we're watching for with Reagan's. Like, where's his velocity? Where's his, like, does he look healthy? And then we can readdress Ray. But I do, like, make no mistake, like, Reagan's, if you project out the next few years for the Royals and you project high levels of success for them, it's with Reagan's at the front of the rotation. Like, I love that they re-signed Lugo. I love that they have Waka for an extra year. I love that Noah Cameron was a revelation. I love all the things that have been happening for them. Reagan's is the guy.
Yeah.
Reagan's is that dude.
I'll tell you right now, though, that I am more concerned about Lugo moving forward next year than I am about Reagan's moving forward. I mean, with the investment they made in Lugo and the way that they're locked into him and knowing what his performance was, basically, as soon as the ink dried on that contract, and I know that he's injured, yeah, and I'm more concerned about, you know, did the Royals throw a lot of money at a guy who is not going to be able to hold up long term? I'm more concerned about that next season in the rotation than I am about Cole Reagan's regaining his form.
Yeah, I get that, and he's older. I think fatigue and injury, it's just we don't know about, and those are, and I agree in the sense that those are the two guys. Again, like, the success level of the Royals, they have enough depth where they'd be okay. But if you really envision them doing something special, it's going to be with those two guys at the front of the rotation. It's why we liked it. I'm not going to be revisionist. I fully endorsed and supported re-signing Seth Lugo. If that timing was that unfortunate, that's going to be a major bummer. Because you're right, they missed it by like a week of these injuries and things and whatever's dealing with it. So it's good to see Reagan's out there. Long story short, we'll see what the Royals can do in some day baseball today. 1 o'clock first pitch as they try to win them all, basically here down the home stretch. If they do, if they win 10 more, maybe they'll have a chance. That would get them, I believe, to that 87 win total we've been talking about. I guess it would be 86, so they'd be just shy of that. But Stephen Kolek, one of the guys brought in at the trade deadline, tasked with trying to beat the Red Hot Mariners for a second straight game. You'll hear it right here on KFH. 1 o'clock, the coverage begins. You can also listen at KFHradio.com or download the free Odyssey app and look for KFH. When we return, let's talk bets. Boy, I've been missing my guy PJ Glasser the last couple of weeks. I gotta make some money this weekend. We'll do it next on Sports Day.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Talk. All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH. And now, if you're looking for the best props and games to lay your money down on, from BetMGM, here's KFH's betting insider, PJ Glasser.
And we welcome you back in. And PJ, good to see you again. I've been out the last couple Thursdays, and I've missed the insight. Ready to fatten up the wallet this weekend. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. God, love the new intro that I got, too. That's
Isn't that
awesome.
Great?
So, yeah, love that. Good to see you guys.
We're getting fancy here. We're trying to make it happen for you, PJ. You're making it happen for us. We appreciate it. We got Thursday night football tonight. We'll get to the NFL in a minute. Let's start in college as we typically do. I'll start you with the local one of interest here. KU in action at home, Big 12 opener, a 13.5 point favorite over West Virginia. They're going to need to win this game by double digits. The over under 55.5. It feels like KU should be able to beat West Virginia by two touchdowns, but that's a pretty big number there.
It is, but can I tell you guys, it's a great spot for KU because they're coming off a bye, and West Virginia is coming off a huge rivalry win in the backyard brawl, right, against Pitt. These are the kind of things that you look for in football, but especially in college, letdown type spots. You know, Georgia Tech, another one of those teams with a big win off of Clemson. So Temple could be a team to look at this week, thinking that Georgia Tech could have a little bit of a letdown. Maybe you want to back UAB against Tennessee after them having a letdown, that brutal loss to Georgia at the end. So it is a lot of points. This spread was originally 11.5. It's up to 13.5 now. I think betting Kansas in the first half -7 is probably the way that I would attack. Again, 2 weeks to prep, so the scripted stuff, first couple drives could be good, and then West Virginia maybe a little sluggish after that win against Pitt last week. So don't want to lay the full two touchdowns with Kansas, but I think -7 in the first half is the way that I would bet that game.
You know, it's a 2-1 record right now for West Virginia. You mentioned coming off of that rivalry win. Rich Rodriguez is back after almost two decades away from the West Virginia program. What do we know about him? What do we know about that program and the way that they play against the spread?
I mean, obviously, they're hoping he can get it back to the glory days with Pat White and Steve Slayton, right, when they were one of the best teams in the country years ago. But it's year one. It's so tough nowadays, you guys, for college coaches, especially at Power Four programs, to get the team off the ground running because of the era that we're in with NIL and portal. Like, if you don't hit it in the portal like Indiana did last year with Cignetti and those guys, you know, it's going to take you a little bit to bring in your guys. So obviously a great first step for Rich Rod and West Virginia beating a rival like that. But I'm expecting it to still be a couple of years, if any. I don't know if Rich Rod is the guy right now in West Virginia or if he is really built for this era of college football. They're still searching for their guy. It didn't work out with Neil Brown for those years. I don't know if it will with Rich Rod. But yeah, they still have, you know, a few years if they want to compete and be one of the top teams in the Big 12.
PJ, what else are you looking at this weekend? It doesn't feel like there's quite as many like marquee matchups, but we know you always have good angles across the board. Walk us through some of your favorite college football bets this weekend.
Yeah, next week is going to be the week, guys, in college football. We got Bama, Georgia, Penn State, Oregon. I mean, there are some heavyweight fights. But this week, some of the marquee games, if you want, some of the top games, Oklahoma, Auburn. I think anything under 7, I like the Sooners, -6.5. I think a bunch of people, you guys, will look at this game and they'll say, well, Oklahoma played Michigan a couple weeks ago, and that spread was only 5.5. Eye test would maybe tell you that Auburn is the better team than Michigan. The problem is Auburn's best win that they had was in the beginning of the season against Baylor. They didn't really throw the ball all that well. It was all about the run game for the Tigers, and whether it was the running backs or it was especially Jackson Arnold and his legs, that's how Auburn was able to get that win. Their defense was able to give up some points and some yards to Baylor. So you look at Oklahoma, who's got a great quarterback in John Materi, is the favorite right now to win the Heisman, and they have one of the top defenses in the country. Auburn's not going to be able to run the ball against Baylor, or isn't going to be able to run the ball against Oklahoma like they did against Baylor. So I think the Tigers could have a tough time moving the ball in this game. Keep in mind, Jackson Arnold transferred over from Oklahoma, so that coaching staff knows him well. They know different ways to attack him. So I do like Oklahoma in that game at -6. And then South Carolina, Missouri is an interesting one, you guys. This spread was as high as 13.5 because we didn't think Lenora Sellers was going to play. Now it's trending towards he might play. I think anything over 10 is a good bet here with the Gamecocks, whether it's the backup Luke Doty or whether it ends up being sellers. I just think this is too many points. A team like Missouri, you know, they're middle of the pack in the SEC. They're not Bama. They're not Georgia. They're not Texas. They're usually not laying this amount of points in an SEC game. So South Carolina off of a bad loss to Vanderbilt, I think that's going to be a low scoring physical game. It's usually close between those two. I would take South Carolina plus the points.
The only other top 25 matchup in the nation this weekend, Illinois, Indiana, number 9 versus number 19. This game is at Indiana. It opened as Indiana 4.5-point favorites. It's moved to 6.5. Is there a play there? Do you like laying those points with Indiana at home?
You know, initially, Tommy, I didn't have a play, but now they're out to 6, and we're out to 6.5 at some spots. I think I'm going to be on Illinois to win this game. I just think it's too many points. I think we're still basing Indiana off how great they were against the spread last year, and I think sports books are still terrified to get beat by this team. Illinois, look, coming into the year, you know, this was a team that a lot of people thought could be a dark horse to make the college football playoff. They were a 10-win team last year. They returned about 16 starters. They had a nice road win at Duke a couple weeks ago. So I don't know if they win the game. And Indiana, obviously under Cignetti in the first year and a half, has been fantastic. They've been great at home. I just think this is too many points. So now at the number, I think it'd be Illinois or nothing for me, even though I do think Indiana wins the game.
All right, let's turn the page to the NFL. PJ Glasser, our betting insider here. Glad to have PJ in and a part of the show and having fun here. You can find PJ at PJ Glasser 9 on X. Send it in inside the betting lines on the BetMGM network. Let's go to the NFL tonight. Dolphins, Bills. It's one of those weird big lines on a short week. The Dolphins have looked terrible. The Bills have looked high octane and high powered. Are you willing to lay 12 points on a short week?
Guys, I think this is the type of game tonight where if you have a girlfriend or a wife, you tell her that, you know, it's date night. You can go out, you know, sacrifice some football. Like this is the game to do that because we all know the Bills are going to win the game. It's just a question of how much. I think the line is too high. I think it's too high. The question is, do you really want to bet the Dolphins? No. You know, like they're definitely like is a chance that this team is quit. There's a chance that they're done. This is a chance that this game tonight could be kind of resemble what we saw the Chargers Raiders game a couple of years ago when the Chargers quit on Staley and they lost by like 50 to the Raiders. Like it could turn into that kind of game. So if I had to bet it, I probably would bet the Dolphins just because I think this spread is too high. If you like the Bills, though, guys, I think you bet alt lines, you know, like bet 20.5, bet 27. Like, I think there's a chance that this thing could get ugly. So
just go wild with the weird ones.
Exactly. So no bets for me, no props for me, because again, just of how much variance and how ugly this game could get. You don't know how long the Bills starters could be out there. Maybe you target like A-chain receiving props, Tua over pass attempts, those kind of things, because the Dolphins will be trailing and that could be the game script. But I think there's a chance this game could get really ugly.
Probably for me, one of the more intriguing matchups in the early window on Sunday, a couple 2-0 teams, Rams and Eagles in Philly. The Rams are interesting. They're 2-0, and they didn't look great to start the game against Tennessee, but then they were able to turn it on and ultimately win that game going away. The Eagles in their game against the Chiefs, yeah, they won the game, but it wasn't like they, you know, were a high-octane offense necessarily. Right now, Philly, 3.5-point favorites at home. That's a little bit of an intriguing line to me. What do you like in this game?
Guys, you know what's funny? And I don't know if you feel this way. The Eagles are turning into the Chiefs where they're winning games, but they're doing it ugly. Yeah. And people just think they're overrated, right? So now, are they going to win the game? Are they going to cover the spread? That's obviously two different conversations. I will give you guys some really good stats on Jalen Hurts and the Eagles in these specific spots. In his career, 15-2 against the spread as a favorite of 7 or fewer points. When he's a favorite of 5 or fewer points, he's 8-0 against the spread. So when people tend to think that the Eagles could be on upset alert, maybe somebody could give them a tough game, especially in Philly, that's when they tend to play their best football. And look, the Rams have been awesome here as of late. They're 9-2 in their last 11 games. Those two losses, have come to the Eagles. It's just a bad matchup. Saquon tends to run all over LA when these two teams get together. So, look, I like the Rams a lot. They were my pick to go to the Super Bowl this year out of the NFC. I just think this matchup specifically, and I just think now we're getting towards, especially if we can get a three with Philadelphia, I like the Eagles in this game.
Well, and how much do you pay attention to some of those cliche trends, too, in a game like that? You've got the Rams going back-to-back road games. You've got them making the West Coast to East Coast 12 o'clock window. So those two things we always hear about, right, that are typically bad news in the betting world, that would also lend itself to the Eagles. And if you've subscribed to those things, then, yeah, I mean, 3 points seems kind of low. I'm with you. I like the Rams, too, in general, but it just feels like a bad spot for them this week.
It does feel like a bad spot. And, you know, I can see again why people are betting the Rams this open 4.5. And if you got 4.5, that's a nice number. But the way this thing is trending, it's looking like we could get some -3 with the Eagles. And if that's the case, again, I think it's a nice buy low. Because Philly won the Super Bowl, and because a lot of people feel like they are the team to beat and they are one of the most talented teams in football, because they don't necessarily look like the Ravens right now or the Bills with how flashy they're doing it. They're not scoring 40 points a game. They're not having 60-yard touchdowns. I think people just assume that they suck, right? They want to bet against them, and they want to pick the upset because you have a good underdog in the Rams. I just don't know if this is the game to do it, and I like Philadelphia.
We got to spend some time on Sunday Night Football, a couple 0-2 teams, the Chiefs at the Giants. The Chiefs have never won at the Giants before, but Kansas City, 6.5-point road favorites. I don't know, man. Like I don't even know what direction to go in this game.
From a spread standpoint, it's tough. I think if you get a 7, I think the Giants would probably be the play. I will tell you guys, I took Kansas City as my Survivor play this week. I think the Chiefs are absolutely the team to use in Survivor. I know people are going to look at Seattle. You could certainly use Buffalo this week. People, I'm sure, will use Green Bay at Cleveland, like those type of teams. We know Kansas City is going to win games this year, and I think a lot of people are going to want to are going to save them for later on in the season. But they got to win this game. I mean, guys, as you know, 11% of teams in the NFL make the playoffs when they start 0-2. That number goes down to 2% when they start 0-3 to make the postseason. They have the Ravens in week 4. The look-ahead line already has them as a 2.5-point underdog in that game. So not only have you used to the Giants, are you 0-3? I mean, even though they played the Ravens well, there's a chance they lose that game also. So the Chiefs are going to win this game. They're going to take care of business. Whether they cover the spread is a different story, but I would take them in Survivor, and I think they're a great money line parlay teaser piece this week against the Giants.
They may get a couple of receivers back, too. Not sure if you saw that practice report yesterday. Monday Night Football features your Ravens. This feels like a Ravens smash to me simply because the Lions have to go on the road. Is it too early to start to look that deep into what we've seen the first 2 weeks out of the Lions?
Yeah, you know, it's still a team I kind of want to see. I want to wait and see, right? We've seen them on the road. We've seen them at home. We've seen them against one of the best teams in football. We've seen them against maybe one of the worst teams in football in the Bears, who could turn out to be another disaster this season. The way I'm betting that game on Monday night, though, boys, is Ravens in the first half, -2.5. Since Lamar's been the quarterback, they've been the best first half team against the spread. And this is one of those games, it's kind of like the Bills, where if you're holding a Ravens -5 ticket and they have a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter, you better start praying and holding on to dear life, because there's a chance the Lions could backdoor and make that uncomfortable. So I just want to bet them first half, let them cover the spread, get out of town. But Lamar has been so great against the NFC, and he's been so great on Monday Night Football, you guys. He's 24-2 straight up against the NFC. He's only lost to them twice, and he's on Monday Night Football, he has 22 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. So it's like you're combining both of those things. Lamar on Monday night against an NFC team. These NFC teams, I mean, I've seen it since he's entered the league. When they see him once every 4 years, you know, they bring in these guys off the street to try and play quarterback in run-throughs and practice, walk-throughs and practice. And, You can't simulate it until you get out there. So he usually puts the opposing defenses in a pretzel and gives them fits. And the last time these two teams played, man, Lamar was unbelievable. So I think the Ravens win the game. But from if I had to bet a spread, I just look at them in the first half -2.5.
With the time we have left, any other great plays from the NFL slate this weekend?
You know what? I'm going to give you guys a big upset of the week because we haven't really had one yet. I think the Cleveland Browns have a chance to knock off the Packers on Sunday. This game is giving me serious vibes. Do you guys remember a couple years ago when San Francisco went into Cleveland and lost that game outright? And early on in the season, we thought they were the best team in football. We thought there was a chance they could go undefeated. And then they went on the road to Cleveland in a 1 o'clock game, and they lost to PJ Walker and the Browns outright. And the way the Green Bay's looked early on in the season, like, this is why we love the NFL. It's these types of games where you get one of the best teams and one of the worst teams. You don't think anything of it. And then you look up in the fourth quarter and this is like a 17-13 game and the Browns score a touchdown in the last minute to pull the upset. So Cleveland's got a great defense, especially at home. And I think this could be one of those spots where, man, 0-2 teams in week three, fellas, they are desperate. The season's on the line. It's kind of their last chance to get any hope towards the postseason. So I think we get a great effort out of the Browns. I think their defense plays really well. I like them +8. I think a money line sprinkle is worth a look as well.
That's the kind of stuff we're talking about here. Give me my high odds. I'm not here. We're not here to waste any time, man. I need that sucker up there and in the +10-1 territory to make it worth my time. I love it. PJ Glasser, our betting insider, host of Send It In, Inside the Betting Lines on the BetMGM network. You can follow him on X at PJGlasser9. You can go back if you joined us late and listen to any of this on the Odyssey app to get those plays. PJ, we appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. See you next week.
There goes PJ Glasser. Tommy, there's your Packers. I saw you shudder a little bit.
I don't know. I don't like that. I mean, I love the Packers this year, but no, you know what?
It's the NFL. The Packers aren't going to go 17-0. Right.
I get the rationale. I think the question is for me, can Joe Flacco do anything to get the Browns, to victory?
They're going to have probably Judkins back this week, the rookie running back who's been a knucklehead, accused of being a knucklehead, I should say, and kind of been having a hard time getting on the field. I think he's back. And yeah, at home, Myles Garrett maybe gives Aaron or Jordan Love some fits. I could see it. Maybe I'll mix it into just something to try and jack those odds up and have some fun. If nothing else, you can just take the plus. Always love having PJ Glasser again. If you missed any of it, go back and listen on the Odyssey app.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
Fitz, can you hear us?
Yeah.
So, Tim, I was just, as we're setting this up, Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com. I mean, I'm getting just question after question. People are stunned by this. I am too. And the question becomes, and I know you know this, is K-State bad or is K-State playing bad? Like, which one of those things is true?
Before Arizona, I thought they were playing bad. I fear this team is bad. And not because they don't have skill or talent. They just don't have that X factor, those guys that make the big play when you need a big play, stop on fourth down. They just don't seem to have that. And it's such a vague thing to try to describe, but I fear this is something not easily corrected. Possibly if they just play a little bit harder, they correct it. Guys, I don't know. This is so foreign. You realize Kansas State has only lost won four games a single time since 1989, the first season of Bill Snyder. This team's got to improve to win four.
Yeah, it's.
I don't see three more wins unless they start playing better. It's
wild to me, Fitz, about how one-dimensional and conservative the offense is, and I understand that obviously they've got injury issues. Dylan Edwards continues to be hobbled, and he tried to give it a go against Arizona, exited the game early, all of that. But in my mind, and we've talked about this at length, in my mind, if you know that you're going to have a running game that isn't effective, then you've got to compensate for that in other ways. And I don't feel like the Wildcat offense is doing that.
I mean, you nailed it. You absolutely nailed it. The offense without Dylan Edwards, the defense only sees one threat, and that's Avery Johnson. And every run, pass, or read option, they're focused on Avery Johnson. They're taking him away, knowing nobody else can beat them. Now, there's an exception to that rule. When they put Jace Brown in the backfield, when you worry about Avery Johnson, you end up with the two longest runs from the line of scrimmage of the year from a wide receiver that you've only played in that position twice. And I think that underscores the lack of creativity within this offense. Hey, this works perfectly fine. This works. And we could, do more stuff off of it instead of run the same play. And no, let's only do it once every two games.
Yeah.
I can't make sense of it, guys. You've got to stress a defense, whether that's through talent or scheming. And they've opted to do neither.
Well, Avery Johnson has run the ball about 8 to 9 times a game forever, which is what he's doing now. But to me, he's not scrambling. Like the Mahomes thing that we saw last week. Like when Avery Johnson has the opportunity to run, he's not taking it. And when you look at that and you're watching it, is it a coaching thing? Do they need to draw up more designed runs? Because I don't think designed runs are what the offense needs. I think the backyard football is what the offense needs. And that only comes when Avery makes the decision to run on his own.
You're exactly right. The problem they claim is the defense is taking away Avery on every designed run. Well, that's not the problem. The problem is on a second and 12, he rolls out, he's got green grass, and he throws the ball, and maybe it's complete but short, like a 4-yard gain, when he could just tuck it and pick up 6 yards, get out of bounds, never get touched. He doesn't take the yardage when he can get it. He's always looking for something better, and he rarely finds it. And I think they've coached that into him. They've coached that into him that for his own safety, he shouldn't run. And also, you can do better throwing the ball. And it's just not true. They have either this kid isn't nearly as good as what we thought, which makes no sense because it wasn't just.
It's not small, true.
It's all of us that evaluated him. Or they've screwed him up. And I'm going to say something I haven't said. But if I'm Avery, I'm not only going to transfer, I might consider saying, you know what? I'm done for the year. I'm going to wear my red shirt.
Wow.
Fitz is mad this morning, everybody. That is not going to happen.
I know it's not going to happen, but.
Nor should it. It won't.
But if I'm Avery, I'm questioning everything about what they've poured into me. And if I'm the coaches, I'm wondering, have we done something wrong here? Because this kid is paralyzed. He didn't even look like the same player from when he was a true freshman. He has regressed. How's that possible, guys?
I mean, how much of this goes to the play caller? I mean, obviously we went from Colin Klein to, a combination of Connor Riley and Matt Wells to now just Matt Wells entirely. I mean, how much of that can we pin on who he's working with as an offensive coordinator?
I don't think there's any doubt that the play calling has been predictable and just awful, awful. I mean, one of the defensive players for Arizona said, basically every time they ran the ball, we knew what they were doing and where the ball was going and who was carrying it. No wonder the offensive line looks bad. They're bad and the defense knows what's going on. So they've got a lot of stuff to sort out. Can they do it in 2 weeks? I don't think so.
Klein was worth about 10 points a game thus far, before and after Colin Klein. It's about a 10-point per game difference. We actually looked this up yesterday. I was having a conversation in the office. So, I don't look. what can they do to fix it is my question. I agree with like that. It's not it. Well, I don't think it's a talent thing singularly, but man, as I'm trying to like cheer people up, I'm like, yeah, they should have lost to North Dakota. This should be a winless team.
Yeah.
Yep.
However, they were right there against Iowa State. How do they just get back to that? Right. In a bad weather first half where Dylan Edwards left the game, they still were basically a possession away from a team we do think is pretty good, at least, because if they can get back to that, they can win some games in the Big 12. Like, just go back to that. And what's happened in the last 3 weeks to get it so much worse than that?
You know how some teams are, and Iowa State might fit this, they find a way to win all the close games. And every team that's successful, unless you're just completely outrageously dominant, does that. You look back at their schedule, 3-7, maybe 10 points at the most, that win in games. This team seems to be the opposite. They know how to hang around but not make those definitive plays that help you win a game. And what was the definitive play that helped K-State win its one game? Avery Johnson running on a design pass play to pick up a first and goal. He ran 25 yards.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a perfect illustration of what's going on.
Yeah, here's the other thing, too, is that if it was just the offense and you could say, okay, like K-State can win games 10-7, right, with like stellar defense, like it'd be, you know, a little bit, you could at least hang your hat on that. They're not even playing well defensively. They let Arizona run all over them. Noah Fifita, the quarterback, had more rushing yards than he ever has in a single game in his college career against K-State. Yep. And then, you know, the running back for Arizona ran all over them as well. So it's comprehensive. It's on both sides of the football. This might be a little hot takey fits, but at this point, how is there a scenario where, like, should Chris Klieman's seat be a little warm right now? Where does that stand?
I don't think Chris Klieman's seat will be warm at all this season from his boss's perspective, because, you know, he's the one who hired him. He's going to stick with him. I think a lot of coaches might have warm seats, but here's where I think Chris Klieman has failed the most. Let's remember back, I should have put these two things together at the time, and did I? No, because it was a big secret they were moving to the four-man front. They didn't want it out there, and I didn't honestly know if they were just doing it for Iowa State or they were doing it all season. They cut spring practices to have more workouts, so they got less time installing a new defense in practice. And what do these guys look like? They look like they know what they're supposed to do in this defense, but they don't have that read and react instinct yet in this defense. I think they need to not revert to the three-man front full-time, just use more of it and mix it up. And if the guys start playing with confidence in that front, maybe it'll spill over to, okay, this is how I'm supposed to pull the trigger and play in this front. Because this looks like this is a bad defense. And that's never been true at Kansas State under Chris Klieman. This is his thing. And I think they've screwed up both sides of the ball this year.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. We got a week to figure it out. I can't remember a more important bye week from a coaching perspective ever. Maybe they come out of it and start doing some of the things we all think they need to be doing. It's pretty universal, I think, from the fans. What are you guys doing at Go Power Cat during the bye week to help people cope or stoke the fire, perhaps?
Yeah, you know, we're having honest discussions, and just like I've done here, whether that's coping or stoking, I don't know. I don't care. It's not my job to do either one. On Monday of this week, we always have a show called the K-State Insiders, which is our staff and a guest. No, this week it was myself and four former players. And it's probably the most remarkable podcast we've ever done because these guys were so good. And two of them are our football analysts, and Monty Spiller and Brian Hanley. But we were joined by two other dudes that just Thomas Hill, former tight end, and Elijah Lee, former linebacker. And I'm telling you what, these guys dug through the issues. They did. And it's remarkable to listen to. We're trying to put together another one for tonight. But guys are getting a little timid to come forward and talk too much because there's been some pressure on some former players, which is a bad sign. It's a bad sign when that kind of stuff starts going on.
Fitz, hang in there. We'll play another football game. They're going to win another football game this year. They will. How many? I don't
better
know.
Better be in 8 days or 9 days, because if not, they're in big trouble.
I don't have any good words for you, Fitz. I don't know. I don't know what to say to any K-State fans that keep asking the same questions you're getting asked. I don't know, man. It surprises us too. I did not see this coming. Didn't have this one on the old bingo card.
My one.
Go check out gopowercat.com, Fitz. We appreciate it.
Aggie Bell.
Oh man, I hate when this happens. I hate when we have high expectations for Team Tommy, and it just is so clearly going to come up short. It bugs me to no end. And this is as egregious of one as I can remember. All right, Tommy, that does it. You ready for a finale tomorrow?
You know, I can't wait. We've got the whole crew in on Friday to do our picks and everything, and I'm going to have to soak in. I hope everybody's really nice to me on my final show. I deserve all the accolades and, just compliments and everybody talking about how great I am. That's what I'm hoping for in my final show.
Is this a pressure movement because you're our boss now? Are you gently implying some sort of mandate?
I'm not saying that, but I'm also not saying that.
Don't forget Day Baseball today. Sports fans, you've got the Royals right here on KFH, 1 o'clock hosting Seattle. Can they win them all? And is that enough even if they can? We'll find out in just a little while. We'll see you tomorrow. We've got picks, all kinds of fun. Tommy's finale as a regular host on the show. It's on a Friday. See you then.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.